Good evening and welcome to the local news. Today is Monday, November 18th. I'm Lauren Schmidt reporting for KMUD. In tonight's news, Humboldt supervisors suspend cannabis tax. Strong bomb cyclone to hit North Coast. And Congressman Huffman on Republican government control, controversial cabinet picks, and analyzing Democrats' defeat. Stay tuned. News on those stories and more coming right up. The National Weather Service in Eureka has issued multiple advisories for our region, including warnings for high wind, high surf, and winter weather. Winds gusting between 60 and 70 miles per hour are possible in higher elevations, accompanied by heavy precipitation. Over a 24-hour period between Tuesday and Wednesday, areas like Shelter Cove and Petrolia could see up to 9 inches of rainfall, while areas like Eureka and Arcata may receive up to 3 inches. And this first major storm of the season has now been classified as a bomb cyclone. We go to the National Weather Service in Eureka for more.
This is Zahaira Vélez Serrano. I'm meteorologist at the National Weather Service Eureka. Bomb genesis or bomb cyclone means like a cyclone will deepen or strengthen rapidly in 24 hours.
Bomb cyclones occur when warm and cold air masses collide, causing rapid intensification as pressures drop. According to the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, a pressure drop of more than 24 millibars in 24 hours is called a bombogenesis, creating what is referred to as a bomb cyclone.
This one is expected to be stronger than that, like deepen more than that. So it will be the strongest cyclone that we have probably ever seen in the North Pacific.
We asked the meteorologist if there are specific areas or local rivers considered a high risk for flooding.
At this moment, the main stem are not expected to reach flood stage. They're expected to have a rapid rise, but not reaching flood stage at this moment. But the thing is, this soil is already saturated, at least for Humboldt County and Del Norte. And with all this precipitation, will increase the risk of rock and mudslide, flooding of small streams, and probably flooding in urban areas as well. So, yeah. So it will increase in the potential for at least Wednesday, more likely on Thursday. But at this moment, we are not expecting the main stem rivers reaching flood stage.
If your property has a history of flooding, sandbags can help divert water. In Humboldt County, free sandbags are available to residents in Eureka, Arcata, and Fortuna. You can see the full list of locations by following the Humboldt County Office of Emergency Services on Facebook. In Mendocino County, which is under a flood watch, sand is being distributed behind the CV Star Center on Lincoln Street in Fort Bragg. Residents are asked to bring their own bags.
Everybody, be prepared. Stay tuned for updates. But the most important, everybody stay safe.
For an up-to-the-minute weather forecast, you can visit weather.gov/EKA. The Humboldt County Office of Emergency Services has also been issuing alerts to help residents prepare.
My name is Ryan Derby. I'm the Emergency Services Program Manager for the Humboldt County Sheriff's Office of Emergency Services. And the reason we're talking today is because we're expecting some pretty heavy rain and heavy wind beginning tonight through the rest of the week. term called an atmospheric river. Essentially, we're going to see 5 days of pretty significant rain, which could cause some flooding in low-lying areas, you know, urban areas, creeks and streams. And then there's possibility of the Mad River and the Eel River reaching what we call action or monitor stage going into Thursday, which, you know, we're not going to see major severe flooding, but we are going to see rivers rise fairly quickly. And that's particularly concerning for you know, roadways and houses that are close to the river, as well as encampments that are along the watersheds out there.
At the National Weather Service website, again, weather.gov/EKA, you'll find a detailed map of affected areas and likely impacts, which includes the winter weather advisory in effect for areas east of Garberville and Willow Creek into Trinity County, the flood watch for Mendocino, a high wind warning active from Shelter Cove north to Crescent City, and a storm warning, which is incoming, with all impacts expected to unfold over the next 4 days.
For us, this storm is really just kind of the, I guess, the season opener of what's likely going to be a pretty wet winter for us in Humboldt County. You know, the atmospheric rivers, we're pretty prone to them here on the North Coast, so we expect them. But with one as long as this one is, again, 5 days, it's going to be a lot of water in a pretty short amount of time. So I think that amount of precipitation coupled with the winds that we're expecting is going to cause quite a bit of debris, particularly coming down on roadways. And for people who live in rural areas that are surrounded by trees, it's really important during the wind event to stay away from your windows and try to avoid going outdoors if you're able to. A lot of the preparedness that we're focusing on right now is around roadway safety. And, you know, certainly with a storm event like this, we're expecting widespread power outages. So we're going to be increasing our messaging over the next couple of days to remind folks what to do in the case of a power outage, particularly if they have, you know, electricity-dependent medical devices, reminding folks to charge up backup batteries. If you have a generator, to make sure that it's operational and to make sure that it's fueled, and then providing some tips on how to operate generators safely. Also really recommend that people sign up for local emergency alerts and sign up for weather updates from the National Weather Service. Because right now, you know, as the storm's coming in, there's still some unknowns of, you know, how much water we might actually see. You know, of course, the forecast comes with a certain variability attached to it, so we want to encourage people to routinely monitor forecast information, and if there's any observed impacts in their area, that they report that both to the Weather Service and can report it to the Office of Emergency Services as well. We're always looking for people to ground truth impacts as they occur so we can know where to prioritize any kind of response effort that may need to take place.
Some impacts are already being seen in higher elevations. The Humboldt County Department of Public Works released an update on snow and road conditions for Bald Hills Road, which received 3 inches of snow overnight. They stated that the road is clear, but drivers are advised to carry chains. Titlow Hill Road also recorded 4 inches. And like Bald Hills, the road is clear, but motorists are asked to carry chains. More snow is expected on Wednesday and Thursday, starting at elevations as low as 2,500 feet. Local officials are using social media to share updates about the storm's effects. The HOOPA, Office of Emergency Services, has activated its Emergency Operations Center. They also announced that PG&D crews have been deployed to rural substations to help mitigate expected outages. Shelter Cove Fire has issued a warning urging residents to avoid driving during high winds due to the risk of falling trees and downed power lines. But for those who must travel, Ryan Derby recommended the following tips.
First and foremost, the most important thing is just to take it slow and use extra caution on the roadway. We all kind of get in this autopilot mode when we're driving to places that we go routinely and don't really pay attention to what's going on around us, but when the road conditions aren't safe, you know, it's better to be late than to not make it to your destination. But we also recommend that people assemble a car emergency kit that has, you know, some light snacks, some water, a flashlight, maybe a blanket. And if you have the ability to get, you know, like a roadside flasher or flares, if your car does break down or you end up in an unsafe situation, you know, kind of replicating what you would do in a home emergency kit, but for your vehicle. Again, you know, the biggest thing is just to take it slow on the roadway. And if you can avoid traveling, to try and avoid traveling. It's important that people just take that extra time to do their preparations in advance. You know, make sure that they do have some shelf-stable food, some water, you know, warm clothing and blankets if their power goes out, and just kind of dust off our winter preparedness plans and make sure that we're ready for really this week and the months to come.
For more tips on how to prepare for extended outages, you can visit the California Office of Emergency Services page by searching Ready California.
And really use your best judgment. If you feel unsafe, you don't need to wait for emergency officials to tell you what to do. You can take action yourself. We're not planning on operating our Emergency Operations Center for this event, but we are closely monitoring at the Office of Emergency Services. And if there becomes a life-threatening need, we will issue alerts accordingly. So it's really important that people register for Humboldt Alert at humboldtgov.org/alerts. And that's the best way that we can notify you if there is an emergency in your area.
Residents are urged to sign up for emergency alerts at humboldtgov.org or Mendocino residents at mendocinocounty.org. KMA News will continue to provide updates as the storm progresses and impacts our region. Humboldt County will suspend the Measure S cannabis tax, but not for as long as farmers are asking for. KMUD's Daniel Mintz reports.
Humboldt County's cannabis excise tax is again being suspended after numerous farmers and industry advocates told the Board of Supervisors their financial struggles are getting worse. A majority of county supervisors voted for a one-year suspension of the Measure S tax covering the 2025 cultivation year. Included in the vote are directives for staff to develop further options, including repealing and replacing Measure S. Supervisor Michelle Bushnell recused herself from the discussion and the vote at the November 12th meeting due to paying Measure S taxes herself. This comes after supervisors suspended the tax for 2 years and then reinstated it at a 10% level for payments due this year. During a public comment period, Ross Gordon of the Humboldt County Growers Alliance said a survey the group distributed last September showed worsening conditions in an agricultural industry that's nevertheless still important to the county's economy.
About 107 cultivators responded. Of those cultivators, 85% said that since the board's decision to totally suspend the Measure S tax in November 2022, things have gotten worse. Cultivators reported that average price per pound has dropped from $400 a pound to $350 a pound over the last year. 66% said when asked about their sustainability that they're reassessing from year to year. Just 19% said we're keeping our head above water but not doing great, and just 2% said they're doing well. At the same time, we have economic data now showing from a Sonoma State study that cannabis generates about $669 million a year annually in terms of both the direct revenues and the impact on the rest of the economy, and supports 5,600 jobs. So what does all that data mean? I think it means a couple things are true at the same time. The cannabis industry here is still a major source of economic activity and livelihoods in the county. We think about 10%. And at the same time, nearly every business is struggling, and the businesses that are successful are barely keeping their head above water with very little margin.
Cannabis farmers said they're struggling just to break even and should pay the same excise tax that other agricultural industries do. Zero. The county's previous actions include having farmers who owe back taxes enter payment plans. During a staff presentation, supervisors were told that the total Measure S tax debt to the county is now at about $12 million. The farmers asked for another 2-year tax suspension, which Board Chair Rex Bones supported.
You know, I've got a good amount of ag in my district, and this is a single tax on a single product. As was stated earlier, nobody else is paying this tax, but we all want to get a piece of the pie, the state, everybody. And basically the pie is gone. And if we want to have any idea of maybe having pie later, we're going to have to support the cultivators.
Supervisor Steve Madrone also supported another suspension for 2 years. But Supervisors Natalie Arroyo and Mike Wilson had doubts about that. Wilson said the intent of voters was to produce revenue for services, and there's still support for that.
You know, if we make a decision not to or to suspend, then we're going to, you know, we do. There is the other side of this. Every revenue source is on the back of, some, you know, whether we get it from whatever taxes we may get from wherever it is and whatever fees we may get. That is, everybody could benefit from, who is being charged or taxed will benefit from a reduction. The question is how many of those can we do and still provide services and be functioning as a county? I mean, I think that's one of, it was a question today. It's like, we want to not have spending, but then we also, or we want to do services, and then we need revenues to do that.
In characteristically convoluted fashion, supervisors made motions, restated them, and then debated what they actually were. Ultimately, a 3-vote majority agreed to suspend the tax for another year, with Bone voting against due to his support for a 2-year suspension. For the current year, cannabis producers are obliged to pay 10% of the Measure S tax, which is $1 per square foot for outdoor grows, $2 for mixed light, and $3 for indoor. In Eureka for KMUD News, this is Daniel Mintz.
In national news, KMUD got an opportunity to speak with our representative for the North Coast, Congressman Jared Huffman, who recently won his bid for re-election, now serving his 7th term in office. Good afternoon, Congressman Huffman, and thank you for joining us here on KMUD News. With so much going on, I'm not entirely sure where to begin today, so I'll open the floor to you to share an overview on the current political landscape.
Oh, goodness, it's hard to synthesize and reconcile and make sense of everything that's happened in the last 10 days. But, you know, I guess where I'm coming from in the wake of this election, Lauren, is, you know, I got reelected. I'm, you know, pleased with that, obviously. It's a great honor. But the bigger picture of the national election is really ominous. And I don't want to sugarcoat that for people. I don't think I'm doing them a service if I peddle false hope about what is coming. But I'm also no good to anyone if I wallow in the pit of despair and paralyze myself because of just how overwhelming it can be. So I think people need to see that leaders that are in the arena, especially at the national level, are dusting themselves off and getting back at it and beginning to figure out some responses to what we know is coming.
Republicans will now control all 3 branches of government, raising concerns about the lack of effective checks and balances under the Trump presidency. Key positions are expected to also be filled by loyalists. What does this mean for our country and possibly the future of democracy?
It's an open question, but we're going to start finding out very soon whether the existing guardrails are any good at containing Donald Trump's extremism and his authoritarianism. These Senate confirmations of some of these crazy appointments that he's making will be an early test of it, right? Are there any adults left in the room in the Republican Party who can say Matt Gaetz is not a serious nominee for the Attorney General of the United States? Tulsi Gabbard is not a serious nominee to be the Director of National Intelligence. And there's a handful of others that, you know, putting aside their politics, I understand that I'm not going to get anyone that agrees with me politically in any of these positions, but these are deeply unqualified and disqualified people. And, you know, it's going to be an early test to see if there's anyone just with the courage to say that in the age of Donald Trump and unified Republican government.
Some of your Republican colleagues have condemned Matt Gaetz, who recently resigned from Congress amid reports that Trump intends to nominate him for Attorney General. His resignation, of course, also coincides with the House Ethics Committee preparing to vote on releasing a highly damaging report involving allegations of sex trafficking with underage girls and alleged drug use. Is there any chance that that report could be made public? Should it be leaked in the interest of transparency? And what are the processes in place to challenge this nomination?
Yeah, so Lauren, I'm not on the ethics committee, and that means I have not read the report, and I cannot leak it to you, sorry. It would be kind of a righteous leak that I think would be cheered by both Republican and Democratic members of the ethics committee. I have heard it described to me as damning and devastating, and I can't imagine anything more in the public interest, you know, with this guy as a pending nominee for Attorney General of the United States, than for senators and the American people to see this. So my guess is it'll actually be released by the committee. I think they'll probably vote to just release it. But if they don't be too surprised if, you know, maybe even one of the Republican staffers or Republican committee members chooses to leak it, and then we'll all find out. But, you know, if it says what I think it does, there is no way that Matt Gaetz survives as a nominee.
On Veterans Day, we interviewed a 99-year-old vet who fought in World War II. He was in tears as he expressed deep concern about the state of the country he fought to protect from fascism. He's alarmed by what he sees as the rise of fascist ideology, not just in rhetoric, but in leadership choices, such as Donald Trump's reported pick for the Pentagon, a Fox News host linked to tattoos associated with white supremacy and neo-Nazi movements. How are you making sense of this, and what message would you share with those who feel deeply concerned like this veteran?
Yeah, well, it sounds like a powerful interview, and I'm so glad that that veteran is still with us and is speaking his mind. I obviously agree with him strongly, and I think it is tragic and sad that this is happening. But I also think that whatever caused so many Americans to vote for Donald Trump, I don't think they were voting for some of the stuff that's going to be coming at us in the weeks and months ahead. I think there's going to be a pretty quick reality check that they are being manipulated and betrayed. And so stay tuned. But I do think that public opinion and the coming backlash is going to be an important check on this administration. Congress is supposed to be a check as well, you know, one of those guardrails. But with unified Republican control of both houses, it's going to be tougher for that to function. But I think the American people still matter. And my guess is that we're going to start to hear from them in a big way.
There's been significant speculation about why Democrats did not perform as well as initial projections suggested in the recent election. While there may not be one single answer, how do you respond to the analysis?
I think the hot takes are often really bad. And I am trying to just take in as much kind of data and analysis as I can. There have already been some really interesting theories. I think you've always got to be careful in a moment like this also not to overreact because, you know, there's this, it would be great. It would make us feel so good if we could point to the one or two things that would have produced a different outcome. Then we would be smarter. We would obviously make changes and never repeat those mistakes, and onward we would go. I'm not sure it's going to be that simple because I think truly the more we take stock of this election cycle, the more we appreciate that there were some structural elements built in that were going to be very hard for Democrats to overcome no matter what we did and no matter who was on the ticket. I think, you know, had Joe Biden not run in the first place, that probably would have been our best chance of winning this election cycle, because we needed to show the American people that we were capable of being the party of change when it comes to immigration, or, you know, to some extent, the border chaos, and really the confronting of inflation and high costs of living. And they sort of lumped all that on Joe Biden, and there was no way in 100 days for Kamala Harris to get out from under that association. And that was just something that hurt Democrats up and down the ballot.
And finally, some of that speculation has centered on the ongoing war. Thursday was President Biden's deadline for Israel to get more aid into Gaza. That deadline has passed without fulfillment. Do you have any insight into what comes next in terms of U.S. policy or actions?
So distressing, and it's so awful. And Lauren, there's nothing that I feel good about in terms of talking about this. Obviously, Biden was unable to resolve this horrible conflict and to meet the humanitarian needs of the Palestinian people. I was unable to pressure and try to drive that outcome as a member of Congress. Nobody was able to. And you know, at this point, obviously, the Israeli government is delighted to have Donald Trump riding in to give them permission to do whatever they want. And this is a very extreme conservative Israeli government that is going to consider things like completely annexing the entire West Bank, maybe even Gaza, doing things like, you know, further inflaming these conflicts, including in Lebanon, rather than resolving them. So I am deeply concerned, and I think our ability to leverage a better outcome is very diminished. I'll have to really reassess how I approach this as a member of the next Congress and in the minority party, but it's going to be really bad. And I guess the one other thing I would say, you know, I realize that for the ceasefire folks and the critics of Israel, and I'm a critic of Israel, but I'm not a critic of Israel's right to exist, but some are. And they have spent a lot of time over the last year really amplifying what they view is the shortcomings of the Biden-Harris administration and convincing people to punish the Biden-Harris administration, sit out the election, support Jill Stein, do whatever they want. Well, I hope they take some accountability for what has happened now. And the fact that you've got Mike Huckabee, of all people, as the ambassador to Israel. This is a guy who believes Israel has a biblical birthright to the entire West Bank, which he calls Judea and Samaria, that they should just annex it, that settlements are just communities, and we should have more of them, and the Palestinians just have to find somewhere else to go. This is so extreme and outrageous, and that is what has been set in motion because of these geniuses who just wouldn't accept less than perfect, I guess, from the Biden-Harris administration.
Again, that was our representative for the North Coast, Congressman Jared Huffman, who was reelected to serve in the 119th Congress, marking his seventh term. While five races have been uncalled, it is clear that Republicans will have a slim majority. That's all for tonight's broadcast. Thank you for listening. Thanks to our engineer, Javier Rodriguez. And thanks to our reporter, Daniel Mintz. KMUD News is online. You can find us on KMUD.org, SoundCloud, Instagram, and Facebook. That's where you can see stories, links, and videos. If you have questions or suggestions, you can give us a call at 707-923-2605 or send us an email to news@kmud.org. Reporting from our studio in Redway, I'm Lauren Schmidt.